Blog Talk Radio.
Think big. ThinkBigRadio.com for all of your realty, business, financial, entertainment, and networking needs. We would like to thank you all for your continued support and spreading the word about ThinkBigRadio.com. Have you spread the word today? Hello, ThinkBigRadio.com listeners. It's Elaine Seth, your host for today. For our new listeners, please make sure you visit www.thinkbigradiohosts.com to learn more about your big thinking hosts. Tonight, ladies and gentlemen, we have a very special guest, the original Mr. Bruce Smith. Bruce, are you there?
I'm here, Elaine, and I thank you for saying the original Bruce Smith. I am not the one from the Buffalo Bills. I'm the Buffalo from the University of Colorado.
Thank you so much for clarifying that, and thank you for being with us tonight.
Well, thanks for having me on tonight.
Now, before we get started, let's make sure everyone knows how to reach you. If you would, please share your contact information.
Well, my contact information, my website is kingbay@bellnet.ca, and my phone number is 416-366-0818. And it can also be contacted through King Bay Kids, www.kingbaykids.ca.
Wonderful. Now, Bruce, you are a multi-talented man, an author, football player, mentor, chaplain. The list goes on and
wow.
on.
Wow. Can you imagine all that on a business card?
I tell you, have a big business card. You know, they say the great ones are always reinventing themselves, and you have definitely done that. If you would, tell our listeners about your life as a child growing up in rural Texas in the 1950s.
Well, for a lot of people, certainly our listeners from down south, growing up in the 50s and 60s in Texas was very difficult if you happened to be black, because it meant, you know, riding on the back of the bus. It meant, going to separate schools. It was something that, you know, was it's hardly unthought of today, but this is actually what I experienced growing up at that time.
Right, and you faced a lot of challenges as well, I'm sure. I understand you were raised by a single mom.
Raised by a single mom, grew up in, you know, relatively poverty, having sometimes no gifts for Christmas. I think when we had a great Christmas, we'd get one thing for, you know, for Christmas. But we had a lot of good times, a lot of fun as well. You know, swimming in the illegal holes, or hanging out late at night, you know, before mom got home from work. I mean, there was always, you know, things to do to have fun. And, of course, the main thing we did was sports. I mean, we got involved in sports. I did at probably around age 5.
Wow, you got to start early.
Yep. Well, it's kind of, in Texas, football is king. And everybody there, certainly if you're my size, remember, Elaine, everything from Texas is big. And I'm big. I'm about 285 right now. So you start playing football very early in Texas.
Wow. And if you would elaborate on what the lack of a father figure in your life taught you. I'm sure that there were a lot of disadvantages, but I'm sure there was something you could pull from that was also positive in regard to growing up as a man.
I think as a man, it helped you to sort of take responsibility early in life. But to be honest, I would have to say it was more negative than positive. I think growing up as a kid, you want to feel secure. You want to feel that the idea of having safety and security and provision. And I remember as a child always growing up thinking that I wasn't as good as the other children. And I think to compensate for that, I became a bully. I think that was to hide the fact that actually I was actually very fearful, very afraid. And being a big kid, how do you do that? So you masquerade that by pretending to be tough.
Right. And did you find yourself getting into trouble because of this?
Yeah, I was growing up in high school, sports really helped me a lot, but I found myself when I got off to university, sort of away from my mother, under my mother's wings, it wasn't long before I found myself getting into a lot of trouble, stuff to do with, gangs and guns and drugs, the kind of things that you would never think of, but unfortunately for a lot of kids that grew up angry and rebellious, a lot of times just out of rebellion, you end up getting into a lot of things that you wouldn't normally get into.
Right, and I understand in your book you touch on the fact of growing up with a father that abandoned you and then a stepfather that abused you. How did you pull a negative situation into a positive? You obviously made the choice to change.
I think at one point after sort of realizing, you know, that with the decisions I was making, I wasn't going to accomplish my goals of graduating or, you know, being a professional athlete. And I basically realized, you know what, my choice is my responsibility. Even though those things happen, I could continue to use that as an excuse. I used that as a springboard to success, and I decided to do the latter.
Right. And, you know, one of my favorite quotes is by Viktor Frankl. I'm not sure if you're familiar with this quote.
Yeah, of course I am. Concentration camp.
Right. He quotes, "The last of the human freedoms is the ability to choose one's attitude in any given set of circumstances."
That's what I tell the kids. You're born to win and not to lose, but you alone must choose when to lose. Doesn't matter your color, doesn't matter your race, the place you were born, or the challenges you face. You were born to win and not to lose, but you alone must choose.
That is absolutely wonderful. That's beautiful. Because a lot of times we get caught up in the blame game, you know,
yeah.
Like we think, oh, well, I can't do this because of that, or this is happening because of that. And it comes to a point where we really have to open our eyes and decide, you know what, we have a choice.
We have a choice. And there's opportunities. As long as you can look back, you can always find people like Viktor Frankl or Dr. Martin Luther King or people that were in negative situations, and they turned those situations around. I mean, look at the present American, the race for presidency. I mean, you know, Barack Obama was raised with a single mom. So in America, all things are possible.
Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, when I'm training clients, one thing I always tell them that it's not where you start, it's where you have the vision to go and having the correct people around you, support system along on your journey to get there.
That's right. It's really it's making the choice not to blame, but to take responsibility.
Right. Now, I understand you had a wonderful opportunity to attend the University of Colorado on a football scholarship.
Yeah, well, that was one of those unusual things. I had already decided to go to play football down in actually, I was going to a school called Alcorn A&M, which is down south in Alabama, but then one of those fluky things. The University of Colorado was actually scouting some players from a larger town in Houston, Texas, which is a much larger place than Huntsville, and they spotted this bow-legged number 61 on the field making all the tackles. So I ended up getting invited to University of Colorado to play football on the scholarship when they were actually recruiting from another team.
Says a lot about being in the right place at the
right
time and doing
the
right thing.
doing the right thing.
Wow. And how was the transition from rural Texas to Colorado?
It was difficult. I remember, I don't know if you ever, that one of my favorite Western movies was called Custer's Last Stance.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I felt like Custer. I mean, imagine, I grew up basically in a totally segregated town up until my senior year. And, of course, University of Colorado at that time was about 95% white. So it was very unusual going from total segregation pretty much to a situation where it was totally integrated.
Right. And did you find it challenging to stay out of trouble, or had you already changed your ways by the time you've gotten to the University of Colorado?
When I first got to Colorado, I was so afraid that they had given a scholarship to the wrong guy. I was on my best behavior. I would just go to class and go back to my room. It took me a couple of years before I really realized that I belonged there, before I became sort of really acclimatized, you know, to the nightlife and the social scene. It was probably my second, going into my third year, where I found myself sort of drifting away from school and getting into a lot of trouble off the field, based on some things that happened that, again, I sort of blamed the coach for things that happened rather than, you know, again, taking responsibility. And found myself, you know, with the wrong crowd, hanging out with guys that were going nowhere. I think that's a reminder, what you just said, is we must be very careful in the people that we choose to hang out with. I mean, you're only as good as the books you read and the people you hang out with.
That's right. Absolutely right. That could not be spoken more clearly. And I wonder, what did you major in at the University of Colorado?
Well, I hate to say this on an internet interview. I think it was footballs and girls, and I think I got an A in both of those. But actually, I went there to get a degree in recreation, but I didn't graduate. I did attend there for 4 years on a scholarship.
Okay, and how did you get your start in the Canadian Football League?
Well, someone actually that I knew from University of Colorado, who was actually on the 1964 Olympic team as a runner, he ended up coming to Canada to play in the Canadian Football League, and the coach that coached him, I was referred to him through this friend of mine, and I was invited to come to Canada as a tryout, and I made the team and won a championship in my first year, and ended up having an 8-year career in the Canadian Football League.
Wow. So from Texas to Colorado to Canada, what were your thoughts of Canada before going there? Because I always think it's so far away. It's so
cold. like a lot of Americans, I mean, you don't grow up thinking about playing football in Canada. So my first thought was dog sleds and Eskimos. So when I came up in the summer of 72 in June, I had on a winter coat and a stocking cap. When I got off the plane, it was 95 degrees.
Oh, my goodness, you must have felt as out of place at that point as
I
did when you first started at Colorado.
But I was really quite surprised. I mean, they had Toronto is a very large city, very modern city, you know, tall buildings and lots of cars and subway. I'm saying, wow, this is going to be a fun place to play football.
Now, who did you start off with in the CFL?
And I started off in Hamilton Tiger Cats, or the Canadian version of the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Okay.
Has the same colors and the same kind of town. Hamilton is a steel town like Pittsburgh, and the fans there are very much like the Pittsburgh Steelers fans. They are very much behind the team because the team is, you know, the whole city has an identification and a love affair with the team.
Wow. And from there you went to?
From there I went to a place called Edmonton, which is out west. Edmonton Eskimos are just a prime organization. Very much like the Dallas Cowboys, they've won more championships than any other team in professional football. They've been in the playoffs 33 years out of 35.
Wow!
And then I finished up my career in Toronto with the Toronto Argonauts, and they've had a guy named Doug Flutie was, you know, played in Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
We had a guy from Notre Dame, Angelo Mosca. Carmich Holloway from Tennessee. That was many, many great players. Eric Harris, who played for the LA Rams as well as the CFL. There are many guys who came here, and one of the greatest players whose name you might remember is a guy named Warren Moon, who ended up started off in the CFL at the Eskimos and went on to be probably one of the top NFL players of all time with Houston. Joe Theismann, who played in Toronto. I mean, the list goes on and on.
Wow, a lot of great players got their
start. A lot of great players came in this league.
Wow, and I understand you're amongst those top players as one of the 125 top players of all time. Is that correct?
Yeah, for the Toronto Argonauts, which have been around since about 1929. So that's quite a distinction to be named one of the 125 of all time. So I'm very, very proud of that accomplishment.
Wow, and your position was defensive tackle and defensive end?
Defensive tackle, defensive end. I made coaches all-star at both positions.
Wow. And when did you end your playing career in Canada?
Probably before you were born.
I don't know about that.
My last year was 1980. That's
okay.
When I retired from the Canadian Football League.
And was it a difficult transition from the playing field into what I would call the real world?
I think the most difficult transition for me, Elaine, was deciding what to do. When I decided to leave football, it was a decision that I was had a lot of peace about it. I didn't look back. I had no regrets. I had a good career, you know, won a championship, played with some great guys. And it was just a question of what I would do after my career. And I had two choices. One was to be a stockbroker, an investment advisor, or real estate, and I chose real estate.
Okay. And I understand you had a very successful career once again in real estate.
You know what? It was one of those things. As a football player, I was considered a very introverted person. But I can't imagine being successful in real estate and being introverted. I became an extrovert very quickly. And after my first year in real estate, I became the number one salesperson for an office of about 50 people, and then for number one out of 500 salespeople. And before I was through with that company, I was like number two out of 3,500 salespeople, and then ended up having my own company for 12 years.
Wow, that is great. And I just wonder, you were obviously a very disciplined athlete and football player. Is there anything you took in that training and you brought into the real estate arena to help you find the success?
I think the one thing that I recognized early in life is the power of setting goals. When I deal with the kids, I tell them about the importance of setting goals. And, you know, goals give you power. They keep you on track. They work really well because they give you feedback. You know, all through life, we need feedback. And one thing about setting goals, it helps you to do that. I remember when I was in real estate, after about probably my first 8 months, I was number zero. And I remember we had some of the top agents in all of Canada. I went into the office at 5 o'clock in the morning, and I wrote on the board, Bruce Smith, number one. And at that time, I was number zero. And I remember the manager came into the office and said, well, who wrote this on the board? I said, well, I did. Do you have a problem with that? Oh, no problem. And within the next year, I was the number one salesperson in that office. So it's
wow.
Very, very important to set goals.
Absolutely, because if you don't have a goal, it's difficult to score.
Exactly. What do you have to shoot at?
Yep, and I can just imagine the manager's look on his face. I mean, what, you're 6'4", 230 at this time. I don't think he's going to question you on anything you write on the board.
No, I think it was, and not only that, I was working in an area traditionally where I was told that I couldn't succeed in, so that made it even more, you know, more important that I was able to do that in such a short time and actually to do it even though I wasn't encouraged by the manager that I could have success selling in this particular area.
And how did the way you came up influence you in finding success both as an athlete and in the real estate arena? Did you ever look back on certain instances and just find fuel for the fire to just keep pushing to be number one?
I think, you know what I learned? I learned the power of passion. I think with me, when I'm involved in something where that's passion, I find myself really extra motivated. I tell people, you know, passion produces power. And when I lose passion about something, it's time to move on to something else.
Right. That's
when I was a kid, I was always passionate about sports. I love football. I love baseball. You know, I used to just always dream about it. I remember when I was in the sixth grade and when they had sort of like a career day and they asked everybody what they wanted to be. I mean, I was just bursting. I couldn't wait till they called my name. And I jumped up. I'm going to be a professional football player. And I was age six. I just knew that this is what I wanted to do. I think, you know, the idea of having dreams and visions, this is very, very important. And we need to instill that into our kids as well as to our clients.
Right. And again, to quote one of my favorite authors, Langston Hughes, hold fast to dreams, for if dreams die, life is but a broken-winged bird that cannot fly.
That's a good one. Matter of fact, I had a cousin that went to Langston University.
Okay. Very good. You are listening to ThinkBigRadio.com, where big thinkers come to teach and learn. Your goals are our goals, and your success makes us successful. Please, Mr. Smith, if you would, share with our listeners how they can contact you.
Again, my email address is kingbay@bellnet.ca or www.kingbay.ca. Also, my phone number is 416-366-0818.
Great. And I understand that you have just published a book. If you would, give us the title of your book.
Well, the book is called Our Father, Father to the Fatherless. And really, it's a book inspired by my own, you know, growing up without a father. And it also was inspired by really seeing what was happening in Toronto. We've had a lot of gang violence in the last two or three years in Toronto. And one of the common denominators with this is that the majority, or let's say 80% of the young people that are involved in gang violence are people that are growing up without a father.
Wow. And where can listeners pick up a copy of this book?
Well, right now you can get it Our Father on the Amazon.com. We'll be having more of a worldwide release because it was just written less than 2 months ago. But Amazon.com, under Our Father, Father to the Fatherless, it can be picked up from Amazon.com.
And I understand you have a wonderful foundation, King Bay Kids. And from what I'm reading on your website, King Bay Kids' sole purpose is to help kids at risk lead lives that have more hope than despair, more joy than anger, and more options instead of dead ends. In other words, what every kid deserves, a normal life and half a chance.
Well, either way, I think all of us can make a difference, and certainly those of us who have had the fortune of being athletes or being someone in the public eye like yourself, Elaine, we always have something to give back. The more we give back, the more we receive. So I'm very fortunate to be in a position to help these kids. And right now we're doing after-school programs, homework clubs. We do basketball and other sports events. We do summer camps. And you know what? We get as much out of it as the kids get out of it.
And what are some of the activities that kids are involved in, and how can volunteers give of their time as well?
Well, we have the after-school homework program where the kids do their homework, and then we have a feeding program, and we also have basketball, as well as fun outing events. We take them to professional sporting events, so we always need chaperones. We could always use people to tutor the kids, and as well, one of the things that we need the most is sort of role models, sort of mentors for the boys, and as well as the girls as well.
Okay, and I'm sure it's very rewarding to you when kids first come to you and maybe they have a lack of confidence or they're in a really bad home situation, and of course that shows in their actions or lack
Absolutely.
Of. It's got to be very rewarding to see the transformation of this child from maybe angry and hateful to setting goals, even if they haven't yet achieved them, just seeing them setting themselves on track to this journey where they're going to make so much more of themselves.
You know, I remember one young man in particular, he never smiled. You could never speak to him. And I said, you remind me of somebody. He said, who? I said, me. I was exactly the same way. And the one thing that makes a difference is being there on a consistent basis, because what has to happen, these young people are so used to people not being there. So building their trust, by being there is very, very important. That's one of the most important things you can do, is be there enough for them to trust you.
Right. And what are some of the core values that you try to emphasize for these kids to follow?
Respect is one of the main ones. Responsibility. A lot of these kids have no respect for authority. Meaning parents, teachers, or especially police. We try to really instill in them the idea of respect. You get what you give. If you want respect, you must give respect. The importance of education as a foundation. The importance of dreams and setting goals, and the importance of having a game plan for your life. One of the main sports is basketball, and so I always say, you got game on your mind. Love playing game all the time. You got game. How about you? I got game. How about you? Will your game get you through? You got game, but what else can you do? We always encourage them in the idea of sports, but we want them to know you must have also another foundation, which is education or a skill or a trade, to go along with that.
And also emphasizing ambition and attitude, like you said, to make sure that they make the right choices in surrounding themselves with the positive influences and the right friends as well, right?
Absolutely, because it's important for them to understand whatever choice is a consequence. You can make you can make the choice, but you can't determine the consequence. That's completely out of your control.
Right.
But the choice is good choice, good consequence.
Absolutely. And it has on here that your mission is to break the cycle of violence and despair amongst youth at risk via long-term programs, mentors, and support groups that rekindle hope through experiences of personal excellence in action.
Well, that without hope, people give up. The word hope simply means future. This is why having dreams and visions are so important. If you don't have a future, you have nothing to shoot for. So it's the same thing. It's almost like having a goal. Having a dream or a vision gives you hope. And without hope, you just give up. You know, people need hope. Without hope, it says hope deferred makes the heart sick. All of us need hope. Everybody needs hope. Hope is one of those things that crosses color, crosses generic. Is hope is everybody needs it. So what we want to do is instill in these kids a sense of hope and a sense of purpose.
Right, and definitely something to believe in.
That's right.
Now, growing up the way that you did in the 50s and seeing how these
Wait a minute, in the 50s, you're trying to make me older than I am. I grew up in the 60s.
50s and 60s. Okay, so I gave you 10 years. How do you see any parallels in the way you came up and the way a lot of these kids at risk are?
I think the real parallel I see is simply the idea of really not having a father or a suitable male role model. But really what I see today, Elaine, I think the kids today have far more opportunities than when I grew up. So I think that certainly, as far as I'm concerned, they have a lot less, you know, to be blaming the system for. I talk to kids. I say, how many kids here have picked cotton in their life? And nobody's hands goes up. I mean, how many kids had to miss school to go to work? Not many hands go up. So I make them realize, you know what, this is what we had to go through when I grew up. So today, even though things might not be as good as they like, they have far more opportunities today than when I grew up.
And in regard to success stories, are there any particular ones that stick out?
Yeah, we've got a number of them. One of the things we were proud of this year, we met with the local principal, and the thing that was really stood out was, number one, crime was down and grades were up. And we've also got a couple of young people that were helping to go to college as well.
Okay. And this foundation was started in...
It's about 4 years old. It was started by myself and another friend of mine. It's not actually a foundation. It's a not-for-profit charity.
Okay. And the kids come in. How many hours a week are they required to be there, or are there no requirements at all?
There's no requirements. It's strictly, come as you want to. But fortunately for us, we've got about an average of 65 kids in the program. And when we have special events, it balloons up to about 200.
That's great. Making a difference in that many kids' lives at one time is phenomenal.
Well, you know what? If you can touch one, that one can touch many others.
Absolutely. And it grows from there.
It grows from there.
And it all started from you and your thoughts and your big heart.
Well, you know what? I think when you see in Toronto in 2005, it was called the Summer of the Gun. And when you see those kind of things happening, you said, you know what, you can sit by and let these things just happen. You know, this is somebody else's kid. You know what? What affects other people will eventually affect you. So I think that our attitude is, you know what, it's our responsibility. Let's do what we can to make a difference, and this is what we do.
Great. And I understand that you do public speaking events as well.
Yes, I'm very fortunate to be involved in an organization called Sports Celebrity that books us as speakers, and I speak with companies and community groups, church groups. I'm very flexible in terms of who I speak to. So, and it's something that I very much enjoy as well.
And when you're giving these speeches, what is the core message that you are delivering?
It really depends on the audience. I think if it's a corporate audience, I think with corporations, three of the most important things that I find with corporations is, number one, being clear on your purpose, number two, being clear on your vision, and being clear on your values. I think with young people, it's really the power of choice, understanding that choice is really critical in your life. I tell people, even as an athlete into my third career, I said, look, change, that's all of us have to face change. Change comes three ways. It comes by choice. You make a deliberate choice to change, or it comes by chance. And when I say chance, I call chance faith. And to me, faith it doesn't defy logic. It's just something that's different than logic. I believe that there's something greater than ourselves. But I find for most of us, Elaine, most change comes by circumstance. And change by circumstance always comes with pain.
Absolutely. Growing pains as you transition as well.
As you transition, and sometimes we're stuck in something that we don't like, and but we're too afraid to change.
Right, or even though it's a bad situation, it's a comfortable situation that you
Bad situation could be a bad relationship, could be a company where you're not happy, where you just sort of, and a lot of times, one of the things that holds us back is really fear of change.
Yep, and fear never helps anyone to grow. If anything, it makes you give up and hide.
That's right.
And I understand that you met a hope maker who took an interest in you and invested time and resources with you as well.
Yes, I was very fortunate. My first hope maker was a coach.
A football coach?
Yep.
Wow.
My high school football coach. And the thing that was so unusual about that is, as I mentioned earlier, growing up in Southwest Texas in the 60s was totally segregated. But going into my junior year in high school, there was an order by the state of Texas that it had to be integrated. But rather than complying with the order, what they decided to do in our case, in an all-black school, they sent a white principal. They sent three white teachers and three white coaches
okay.
to an all-black school.
And that's how they—that's what they called integration.
That's what they called integration.
Okay.
But good for me, because the person that they sent—I'm telling you—was the person that they sent, which was my high school coach, became our first official mentor, and Coach McGee was really instrumental in changing my life. I don't know what my life would have been like had I not met Coach McGee, and most of my hope makers and mentors have been coaches.
And that's the beauty of sports and athletics, is that as a coach, you really are doing more than helping the team win the game. You are transforming kids' lives, and a lot of athletes, young kids, will look up to their coach for guidance, especially if they don't have a strong male role model at home.
So a coach becomes like a father.
Right. And they instill trust, and they show these kids how much they can really be by believing in them. And like you said, to have someone believe in you, it's almost like you can touch the moon.
Well, you know what? There's something about having self-esteem, and a coach can give you that. I mean, especially in terms of how they deal with you. I remember Coach McGee. He always encouraged us. When he corrected us, he was fair in his correction. When he did that, he never embarrassed us. I mean, so those kind of things, you never forget that. I mean, that was in high school, and still I remember that as though it was yesterday.
Right, and I'm just curious to know, in regard to this integration, how did the athletes and the student body grasp this? Was it a difficult transition? Was it challenging and caused trouble?
It was difficult. It was difficult. Half the football team boycotted.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and I led it. And I led the boycott, by the way.
I could see that. Did they boycott because they were afraid of you, or did they boycott because they were,
Well, I was, I was always told by my mother I had this gift of leadership, and unfortunately, in my younger age, I didn't always use it to do something in a positive way. Thank God now it's used in a very positive way, but it was just one of those things. We felt we were right. We felt that not allow us to integrate fully. And just do that by sending us a couple of white coaches, but in the end, it worked out. Everybody was so thrilled to have these men who came into our lives, because they not only did they impact my life, but they really impacted a lot of kids even after that.
Wow! And did it take a few years for this to happen, or was it over
no,
the football
it was, it,
season?
No, it took a couple of games.
A couple games.
Yeah, after the first game when we refused to play. Then the second game, we said, okay, we'll go back and play because we wanted to play football.
Right.
So we decided we would lay down and we wouldn't block or tackle anybody. And we were behind 32-0 in the first half. And then one of the coaches slammed the helmet against the locker and got very upset. I can't tell you all this. This is in my book. You have to read this in my book.
Okay.
I'm spoiling the story now.
You're spoiling the storyline. Now, how about your most memorable game or event as a football player?
Oh, that's a tough one. That's a tough one. Oh.
How about one of your most?
Okay, one of my most memorable events is when I was actually, again, in high school, and we were playing baseball. And I was a very good baseball player in high school. As a matter of fact, that was my best sport. And I remember the first time we had to go and we had to play against an all-black team. They weren't too happy that we had these white coaches. And of course, we beat them pretty bad to add insult to injury. And they didn't like that as well. So they threw bricks and rocks and stones at us. And the coach was so frightened, he almost wrecked the bus trying to get us out of there so fast. And we were laughing and having a good time. You know, kids didn't have a real sense of fear. But I never will forget the look on the coach's face. I mean, he really was afraid that we weren't going to make it out of there alive.
Oh, my goodness. I couldn't imagine. Were you guys throwing things back, or were you just ducking?
Oh, yeah, yes, of course. And you know who the leader of that was, me.
I can only imagine.
I'm trying to get off the bus. You know, I'm trying to get off the bus. I'm throwing stuff out of the window, man. He was so upset with me.
You guys end up throwing your helmets and shoulder
helmets,
pads.
Helmets, baseball, bats, whatever we can get our hands on.
Oh, my goodness gracious. And how about as a professional athlete, one of your most memorable events?
Well, one of my most memorable events was when we played against Toronto Argonauts. Toronto Argonauts were considered sort of the cream of the league. You know, they always had these, what they would do, they would go and sign these very, very expensive players like Theismann and Eric Allen went to Michigan State, and there was a guy named Noah Jackson who ended up playing for Chicago Bears. They always had these real high-priced guys, where Hamilton was one of the lowest-paid teams in the league. So we'd always look forward to playing against Toronto. But every time we played, I would always get into a fight with this guy, Noah Jackson, and then I would end up getting fined. And I remember Coach Williams said, Smith, if you get into another fight, I'm gonna sit you down for a couple of games. So anyway, we played the game, and for one of the rare times, they actually won the game. So this guy, Noah Jackson, was mouthing off. As a matter of fact, he followed me into the dressing room, mouthing off. Oh, Smith, I had you today. I had you on roller skates today, blah, 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 blah. I didn't say anything. So what I did, I quietly got dressed, and I went back outside, and I waited for our bus, because we had to take the bus back to Hamilton, which was like 45 minutes. So I didn't take the bus. I actually drove that day. I waited. No, actually, I did. I was on the bus, but I missed the bus. But I waited for this guy to come out of his dressing room. And then when he came out of his dressing room, I jumped him. So,
and I'm sure he got quiet real quick.
So here we are, game over. But the announcer picked up on the fight. So while the coach and the players were on their way back to Hamilton, they're announcing the fight over the radio. Smith hits him with a left. Smith hits him with a right. Smith is on top. Smith, this. And all the players, you know how the players are. They're going through the motions of swinging blows. And apparently Coach Williams was just sitting there. He was trying to be mad, but he couldn't help but to smile. And he was very happy that I won the fight. So I remember when I saw him the next day, he looked at me. He said, didn't we talk about this before? I said, well, Coach, you said if I got thrown out of a game, you would find me. This was not in the game. The game was over. He said, well, don't do that one again, but I'm so glad you won.
That's hilarious. Wow. Now, we're coming down to the end of the show here, Bruce. And
already?
Sure,
seems like we've been on for about 10 minutes.
I know. It's been such a pleasure. But I'm sure there are many people throughout your career that have contributed, and I'm sure that you would like to thank them. So if there's anyone that you would like to thank, now would be the time.
Well, I'd like to thank one of my closest friends, Thomas Caldwell, who's been a real sort of mentor for me in terms of what I'm doing now. in my career as a chaplain. Joe Santos, who's a co-director of King Bay Kids, and Magdalen and Janet and Nellie. Phil Kershaw, who's a co-author of my book, along with Ingrid Walters, who edited the book. My friends in Washington, Jeffrey Johnson, they have a coalition for fatherless in Washington. One of my good friends, Carrie Casey, who is the chaplain for the Kansas City Chiefs. Reggie Pleasant, who's a chaplain for the Tennessee Titans. I'm hoping to connect with all you guys out there and make sure all you guys get copies of the book and make sure that all your teammates have a copy of the book.
Great. Well, thank you so much for sharing your very inspirational story with us tonight. I really enjoyed our conversation, and I, too, agree. It felt like we were just talking for about 10 minutes.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity, and thank you, Elaine, for inviting us on your show.
No problem. And I wish you well as you continue to enhance the lives of youth at risk.
Look forward to meeting you one day.
And you as well.
All righty.
You are listening to ThinkBigRadio.com, where big thinkers come to teach and learn. Your goals are our goals, and your success makes us successful. Thanks again, ThinkBigRadio.com listeners. Until next time, remember, keep your mind right, your heart true, your head up, and live your dream. This is Elaine Seth saying good night.
You there?